You see, it's like there's a gate. And on the other side of the gate, once you go through the gate, there's a light. And when you get through there, when you get into and past all of the stuff that you've been living in your life, you go through the gate, the most amazing things begin to happen. You begin to develop a whole different approach to what you're about and how you're living and what this life is and why you're here and what it's all about. It becomes really crystal clear. And some of the symptoms of going through the gate are that you develop this incredible compassion for others and for yourself, and an acceptance of that I am more than this form. I have to be. And what I am that is beyond this form is much more divine than the form itself, which will wear out. You begin to see that everything vibrates. All form or matter down here is vibrating. It looks solid, but nothing is. I mean, this piece of chalk is not solid. It looks like it is because it's vibrating at the speed of light or close to it. So it looks very much like that. And then you begin to see that about everything, that everything is just vibrating at a different... And then you got to understand that so are you. You are too. If you get examined under a real strong microscope, you'll find that you're constantly in motion. You're not formed. You're not solid. You just can't see it because your eye is only capable of perceiving a certain level of vibration, certain colors, the color scheme and all of that. But you know you're more than that. You begin to see that as things vibrate faster and faster and faster, that sound, something you can't see, but you know it's out there. And so I talk and you hear, and you know that there are waves in the air, aren't they? And that they hit your eardrum at a certain level. And you know that, and you can see it with certain kinds of technological equipment. You can see that they're in the air. You see that you go up a little further and you get into what we call electrum. The stuff of the earth, like the north and the south pole, and this electricity. If you only believe in what you see, then why do you pay your electric bill? I mean, think about it. You plug something in, this thing starts going, stick your finger in there, you know there's something in there, there's something going on. And you look at the earth and you see it's all charged, and so are you. You are. I mean, you're this electrical circuitry that is constantly being charged at all different levels. That's part of what you are, in addition to all of this pile of stuff over here. And then you go up a little further and you get to light. This green board looks green, not because it's green, but because light is vibrating at a certain speed. And it vibrates to the speed that we call green. And we just agree that it's green. And we agree that if something vibrates at that dress you're wearing is red, we'll call that red. And if it vibrates so fast that you can't see, we'll call that white. And if it vibrates a little slower, 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 we'll call it, then it's black. And that's just all vibration. There's no blue in the universe. There's only our agreement. All these things are vibrating, 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 different levels. And then what do you think? Speculate on something else. That up here, that the fastest vibratory motion in the universe is thought. I am hypothesizing and suggesting to you that you are thought. And that is the stuff of the universe, and you can never kill it. It's the fastest vibratory pattern in the world, and you can't kill thought. And nothing gets formed, and nothing dies. Everything is in transition. All of this stuff is in transition. Matter is in transition. Now, you want to really get spooked out. Every 7 years, every cell in your body changes. There's not one cell in your body today that was there 7 years ago. Not one. Not one bit of the form that you were in 7 years ago is here today. None of it. It's all different. And yet you can remember being there 7 years ago. How do you account for that? So it's not a question of whether you occupy different bodies or not. We all occupy many, many different bodies all the time. And the key to understanding this is that none of us are ever formed. None of us are ever formed. And we are something beyond the form that we live and breathe each day. So when you look in the mirror and you see funny things happening to your form, strange things are happening to my form, I don't get it. I got hairs falling out in one place where they used to be, and I got them growing in other places. I mean, whoever had ear hairs? I never had a... What is that? I get my hair cut, and the guy goes in, he takes a little thing, and it goes into my ear and cuts. I never had any hairs there. Nose hairs. What are those doing? Huh? Two more facial hairs. They're a little more coarse than they used to be. A lot of strange things happening to my form. Everything that's in the universe vibrates. Everything.
So we've got a microphone here, and if you take this microphone and you look at it under a real strong microscope, you'll see that it's alive. It's a dance. It's got electrons in it, and they're all moving very fast. But they're moving at such a speed that the naked eye perceives them to be solid. They're vibrating at what we call just below the speed of light. So it appears to be solid. But we know that it isn't solid. They're just vibrating at different levels. And where we stand, what we see, everything that we see appears to, some things appear to be solid, some are fluid, some are, but we know that everything vibrates, right? So there's a vibration in the universe. And a lot of it we can't get at, but it doesn't mean it's not there. We can't get a hold of it. And so you look at just various vibrational levels that are in the universe. And I believe that the highest vibrational level is thought, is just thinking.
Thought is everything. Think of the relationships that you're in right now. All the relationships that you're in. Your husband, your wife, your children, your grandparents, the people that you work with. And just close your eyes just for a moment and understand they're not here. You are here alone right now. What is it that constitutes the relationship that you have with everyone else in your life? Just thought. That's all. It's just thought. What is it that constitutes everything that has happened to you up until this moment right now? Thought. Wispy thoughts. You can't get a hold of them. You can't grab them. You can't smell them. You can't experience them. You think about your wife, or you think about your child or your husband, and you understand that when you see another human being, what you are seeing is thought. You are experiencing everyone that you experience through your mind. Not through your body, not through your mind. They're not here. And yet they are, aren't they? They're not here. And yet you're in a relationship with them, aren't you? Of course you are. But they're not here. You don't have them. You don't have any form. Everything you experience in life is thought. It's thought. And the beauty of that, and the glory of this, is that thought is yours to do anything you want with. And when you use your thought, which is your whole experience of everything on this planet, when you use your thought to violate the principles that hold the whole system together, which is love, which is harmony, which is cooperation, harmony with the component parts of who you are in cooperation with the parts next to you and the ones next to you and so on, that when you use your thought in this way, you can transcend your form and you can transcend anything else that gets in the way of your life being exactly what it ought to be, that is, its perfection, its fellowship with the perfection of the universe, by simply thinking as you are. In the perfection that you are. And that's all it takes. There's no more magic to it than that. You change your thought, which is your experience of everything, the way that you think. Thought is everything. When the pureness of my thought, that is, when I stopped judging myself as a writer and worrying about how the words came out and stopped being concerned about whether I sold books and stopped being concerned about what other people were thinking of it and just became the I am that I am, and allowed my thinking to be only love, I sat down to write Icus, and it was magic, real magic. A transcendent human being can be any miracle. And every one of you have that capacity within you to be any miracle that you want as soon as you unclog yourself of the way that you use what you are, which is your thought. Earl Nightingale just asked me to write a foreword for his book, The Strangest Secret, and I wrote the introduction for it. I resist writing when I'm not ready. I mean, I resisted, like, getting up and sharpening ballpoint pens, okay, just to avoid doing it, all right? But when I'm ready, I just can't wait to get at the typewriter, and 14 hours will go by as fast as the last one did for me. 14 hours. No eating, no sleeping, no fatigue, just paper going as fast as it can go. It just comes out. But when I'm not pure of thought in my writing, when I'm judging it, when I'm clogging myself in any way, no writing takes place. So Earl asks me to write the introduction, and I love Earl Nightingale. I think he's made major contributions. His tape, The Strangest Secret, is one of the most powerful tapes I've ever heard in my life, and I recommend you all hear it. The Strangest Secret is we become what we think about all day long. That's the secret. That's what The Strangest Secret is. So my typewriter has been put away. I had Maya take it over to the typewriter repair place and get it all ready for when I'm ready to write my next book. New ribbons, new little keys on it. The same typewriter I've written everything on, from Erroneous Zones till now, okay? People offered to buy me IBM Selectrics. I said, no, you keep those, okay? I got it all cleaned. I got it all replaced. I spent $200 to repair this $60 machine. So it's up in my closet, way up on this shelf. And I reach up there, and over the last 6-7 months, when I get things home from the cleaners, I take all the hangers. And because there's not enough room, and I can't throw hangers out because I've got this orphan mentality. Someday you might need them, you never know, so I don't dare throw one out. You never know when you'll need a hanger. You could be in your apartment, your car could get stuck in the apartment, and you'd have to get the window open, anything, but don't throw things out. So I go to get my typewriter down because the deadline is now here, and I've got to write the introduction for his book. I go to get the typewriter down, and 200 hangers start attacking me, all right? And I'm, finally I get the cord and I pull the cord and another 30 hangers over here hit me in the face, they're hitting me in the eye, and I'm standing there with no clothes on in my closet at 1 o'clock in the morning looking up at this and I said, you're not going to win. I am writing that thing tonight because I am ready. And every hanger that hit me in the face on my way to writing that introduction became like this opportunity for me to transcend it, to get beyond it. And it's like most people would say, all right, that's a signal from the universe. And the signal is, don't write. You don't have to write. Give up on it. But I use it the opposite. And I sat and I finally got the typewriter out. I plugged it in and I went, psh, turned it on, typed it. I did it in about 40 minutes. I called Earl at his home in the middle of the night. I said, Earl, I'm done with your introduction. I want to read it to you right now. He said, wait, I got to wake up Diana, his wife, and she wants to hear the other side. And I put it on, and they were both crying when it was over. It was so bad. I mean, it was so good. Because when it's time, and the pureness of your thought, and you are centered, and that's what I mean by centered, it is thought, which can control matter at any time you want it to. And in the New Testament, it says, do not be conformed to this life, but be transformed of it. An interesting notion. And what is all matter on our planet, and how is it created, other than that which was given to us by God? What is it? All matter is through form, an idea, a thought, I want to invent chalk. I want to make a microphone. I have a thought. And then I manipulate through my form and create matter. What did Jesus do? What did Buddha do? What did Sai Baba do? What did great spiritual leaders do? Do you believe in the miracles of those spiritual people? I mean, do you really believe? Christ said, all that I can do, you can do, and greater things. How many of you believe in this room that those miracles really happened or that they're just fiction? How many believe that they really happened? I do too. I know that I can do them too. I wonder how many of you know that you are capable of the miracles. Miracles. I'm not here to preach religion at all. I'm here to talk about transformation. What is materializing an object? What is changing water into wine? What is that? But a transformation. It is not using the form, going beyond it to create this. That is using this. And when you know how to do this, when you know this is what you are, and some of you doubt that that's what you are, because I haven't really got it home to you. Now I'm going to bring it home to you. Today it is, what, the 2nd of October. It is 1987, and it is 9 o'clock in the evening, approximately. And I want you to tell me in what dimension everything that has ever happened to you up until this moment exists. In what dimension is everything that has ever happened to you up until this moment? What is it? Thought. There's no form.
So your entire past is thought, isn't it? You can't have it, you can't touch it, you can't see it, you can't feel it, you can't get a hold of it. It is just thought. So how much sense does it make to commiserate and be miserable or feel guilty about something that is pure thought? I mean, if I were to say to you, let's all collectively feel guilty about the outcome of the Peloponnesian War. Let's just feel some guilt. You laugh. That happened 5,000 years ago. What are you doing? I said, well, no, let's just feel guilty about the way the Spartans were treated. I mean, it wasn't nice. The Athenians were, it was terrible. They shouldn't have done that. It's terrible. If only they wouldn't have done that. That's just awful. They shouldn't have done that. Let's feel guilty. Could we change it? By feeling guilty. And you would all say, stupid. Of course not. You can't change anything that is over and is only thought through guilt or anger or fear. In reality, this morning is just as over as the Peloponnesian War. This morning, it's over. Just as over. Because there's no time. Einstein taught us there's no time. There's no time in a linear frame at all. We've only invented that. Now, where is the place in your life where there are no boundaries? There is no limit. No limit whatsoever. The only boundaries we have are in form. And as long as you believe you are form, you're going to always have boundaries and obstacles. When a woman said to me in a church, what are the obstacles to my achieving full happiness? I said, the belief that you have to have obstacles. That's all.
The connection between thinking and creating something for yourself is really there. It isn't just some mystical kind of hocus-pocus thing that's out there, but that you can use this vibrational pattern that we call thought, which is so instantaneous. You can literally make anything happen that you want to by the power of your ability to think. You're tuning into some kind of vibrational pattern that is there for everything, and none of us can escape that. The ultimate in that is miracles, is being able to produce miracles. And that's just one simple little example of it. There are many, many other things in this higher self business or transformation or in this awakening process that are only complicated and difficult because we can't see behind it. We can't see the perfect energy that is behind the form. We can't see the perfect intelligence. There's an intelligence behind form. There's an intelligence behind a fish in water and the gills and how it works. There's an intelligence behind a plant that grows in a certain kind of way. There's a life there, and in that life form, there's intelligence behind that. We miss that intelligence because we're so preoccupied with just what I can see, how I can get a hold of it, and hence the title of this program. You'll only see it when you believe it. You'll see it when you believe it. If you only believe what you see, then you are limited to just what is on the surface, and you don't even believe in the intelligence behind anything. But if you believe that you'll see it when you believe it, and when you start expecting and knowing that there's a special intelligence in the universe behind everything that has life in it, and you begin to behave as if the perfection in all life really matters, you begin to know that that is real for each one of us, then what happens is you're looking beyond what everybody else sees. And all of a sudden you start seeing miracles happening in your life that are just astounding to you. And at one time they were just thought of as coincidences or, oh yeah, but that's weird, but you can't really make that happen. And you start to get to a point in your life where you see that you are much more than just this stuff that you can get a hold of, this form, the five senses that we have, the ability to see and to touch and to smell and this kind of thing. And you begin to know that who you are is much greater than that, much more divine than that, much bigger than that. And it's like you can't ever get a hold of a thought. You can never touch a feeling. You can't come home with a basket full of thoughts or an armload of feelings. Yet you know they're there, and you know that that's how your whole life is. Your whole life is in this realm. Then you begin to look for that special intelligence or that special love. We have so much trouble putting a label on it. And you begin to see it in all life. And you begin to then think in accepting and loving and kind ways towards everything and everyone that has life in it. And before long, you're creating out of that love, out of that special harmony that you are and that is you, you're creating new kinds of relationships and you're creating new kinds of loves and new kind of excitement in your life. And then before long, you're making things happen that you never thought could happen before. And then you start expecting miracles instead of being surprised by them. And your whole life changes.
A lot of people ask the question, does awakening or enlightenment have anything to do with my status in life, my age, my economic standing, whether I've got a job or don't have a job? Or is this sort of a luxury for people who have got it all anyway, and now they can sort of get into their spiritual self or whatever? And I think it works the opposite way. First of all, I don't think it has anything to do with age or socioeconomic status or anything like that. I know that in my own children, one of my children is very, very loving and giving. She's in the kindergarten. And she's the kind of person that has this automatically. All the stuff that I'm talking about, she has it already. If one of the kids in school is crying or upset about something, she just instinctively goes over to them, puts her arm around them and says, things are going to be all right and don't cry. It's just kindergarten. And she's very, very, very loving. And if anybody in the family raises their voice to the younger children, she will instantly, just somehow instinctively, she will go right to that person and say, don't yell at Serena or don't say those things to Summer. You have no right to do that. And she's just this little child, all right, who is somehow a rescuer. She's a very, very spiritual person. I just don't think it has anything to do with where you are in life. In fact, it's the reverse. It's like the title of this is You'll See It When You Believe It, which is a reversal of the way that most people think. Most people think, I'm not going to believe it until I see it. You've got to show me. And they have this very linear, practical approach to life. And so they go through their whole life, and in their lives, they're not making it on a whole lot of levels. The job isn't working for them, and they go to work every day, and they're sort of unhappy and depressed. In their relationships with their family, with their husband and wife and their children, there's this antagonism that's always there. There's never enough in their lives. They're suffering. They're struggling. They're not making it. They don't feel happy. And they think that it's because of not doing the right things. See, I believe that circumstances do not make a man. They reveal him. That's from James Allen in As a Man Thinketh. One of the ironies for me is in the neighborhood that I live in Florida, real close to where I live is a very poor area. And I drive through there, and this area in Florida has the highest unemployment rate in the state of Florida. And the yards are the messiest in the state of Florida. Now, that is a real incongruity to me. Why would a neighborhood where everybody's unemployed, or so many people are unemployed, be so sloppy? Why would there be trash all over the front lawns? Why would the garbage not be taken up? These are people who have nothing else to do. They got all day long to work on their lawn and to keep it clean and to paint their house and to do whatever it is that they... But they're not doing that. Most of the time when you drive through there, you see a whole lot of people sitting around in groups, either playing cards or gambling, or there's some drug dealing going on. What I believe is that a person's circumstances reveal a lot about you. That we have choices as we go through our life, regardless of where we're born or what our status is or what our color is or whatever. We still have a lot of choices that we don't exercise. And what we do is we reverse it. We blame our circumstances on why my house isn't nice and why I don't have a lot of money. And we come up with all of these kinds of excuses. And what you have to do to understand the concepts that I'm talking about here is to get that when you get these principles and they become a part of your life, the circumstances of your life are going to start changing dramatically. It isn't the other way around. It isn't that my circumstances are the thing that created all of these problems that I have, and it's the man that I'm married to, or the woman that I'm married to, or the way my children behave, or it's the job I have, or it's my boss, or anything external to yourself. When you change around your attitudes and your beliefs about yourself and about your fellow man and about the universe and about your place in it, and you begin to adopt a loving stance towards all of those things, when you begin to think loving thoughts and positive thoughts and beautiful thoughts, that's what you ultimately have to give away. So instead of being angry at other people or your boss or whatever, what you have is only loving things to give back to them, or positive things or ways of thinking that are in harmony. That's what you have to give away. And when you start giving that away, you start amazingly seeing the circumstances of your life change. See, many times I will be speaking to an audience or I'll be on television. This happened to me on AM San Francisco just a few months ago. And they were asking me questions about my life and all of this. And they said, well, don't you think that it's really easy for you to say all of these things about being positive and enjoying your life and the perfection of the universe and all of these kinds of things? Because look at you. You're a millionaire. You're a popular author. You've had a lot of fame. You're on television all the time. You've got everything that a person could want in life. It's easy for you to say. And my response was, then I'm the person that they should be listening to. I am not saying these things because I have a lot of money, and because I have fame and so on, that maybe I have a lot of money and a lot of fame because I live these things that I'm talking about. And I'm the person who came out of a set of circumstances that everybody else who came out of those circumstances in my family and in my immediate surroundings don't have the things that I have that they think are so important, this money and this fame and all of these accumulations and things. And coming out of an orphanage situation, coming out of poverty, coming out of broken family, coming out of an alcoholic father who abandoned his family and all of these kinds of things, and having to be put into separate homes and so on, and then living in very, very poor circumstances virtually all of my life, perhaps I am where I am because of these principles, rather than that I can spout these principles because of where I am. That's really my response to people who think that this stuff about higher self and being a more spiritual person, I don't have the time for that. I don't have the luxury for that. My suggestion is that get your priorities in order. Get this stuff that we're talking about here in this program. Get this. And understand that you are the product of the way that you think, and that the circumstances of your life are revealing you. They didn't make you. And that if there are things about your life that you don't like or would like to improve upon, whatever they are, whether it's making more money or improving your relationships or getting a better job or getting your book published or whatever it is that you have got going in your life, that if you stop focusing on that and begin to look at what kind of a human being are you and how do you fit into this whole body of humanity, and are you part of the solution or are you part of the problem? And are you in harmony, first of all, with yourself as a human being? And do you love the self that you are and treat it always with respect and love, that the love that it deserves, and consequently then cooperate with the other people around you? Do you send them love because that's all you have to give away? Do you radiate love or are you trying to get it from other people? And do you see the miracle that you are? When someone asked Eleanor Roosevelt about the subject of reincarnation, which she laughed at, and they said to her, what do you think about coming back in another life? She said, you know, I don't think it would be any more bizarre for me to show up in another life than it was for me to show up in this one. And her response to that was really a reflection of, it is such a miracle that you would show up here. I mean, when you consider the odds against you doing it. When I talk to young people in audiences all the time, they ask about whether they're winners or losers, and I say, how could you be anything but a winner? I mean, you were a winner from the moment that you were born. Oh, come on, Dr. Dyer, how can you say that? I say, well, look, you take your chances of showing up, just in the physical act of what it takes to create you, you take one glob of human sperm and understand that there are several hundred billion sperms inside that one glob, and they're all chasing this one egg. They're all in a race. They're all in this race. The prize is this egg, okay? And they're all swimming as fast as they can, and there's billions of them. They're all going, and guess what? You won. You won the first race you were ever in, and your chances were billions to one against it being, and if anybody else would have won, we wouldn't be talking to you here today. We'd be talking to somebody else that was here. So it's like the miracle of just being here, if you see that, and then you see the miracle of everybody else is here, and then you begin to see that you have to be in harmony with all of these people, and you get that, and you have more of a harmonious approach to life, more of a loving approach, more of an accepting approach, an open approach to everyone and everything that you meet. The more you have that, the more you start seeing the rest of the pieces of the puzzle of your life all fitting very nicely together. It all works. It all works perfectly if you just flow with it, if you just go with it, if you just allow it, no matter where you are.
This is the end of Side 2. Side 1 is already queued up for your next listening.